This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
On the Ta'usin, that we're holding here on the alternatives to Yichud. V'omnom, he says, Ika yidea zayisila fukei v'minei svaris roz hanoflim v'libos b'ni adam. The main focus of the Emunah in Achdus HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to be lafuke, to go away from different ta'usim that are out there. Mem shnafalei for David Azara, mem belei for Avon Amoretz, mem belei for Goyah Aratzis, mem belei for Shisori Shleinim Shesuv Lasses. So different people had different angles as to why they went off and they sort of fudged the Emunah in Achdus Hashem, and usually there's a motivation for it. A person has a particular angle, and therefore he tries very hard to shape Emunah according to his understanding. You find it, for instance, as in Reform movement, these places, whatever particular Yetzirah was the Yetzirah. You know, the person, I agree with everything in Orthodox Judaism except for a mechitza. Well, so because on the one hand, he's from, on the other hand, he's very embarrassed of having women sit separately, so then he's just, he basically has to reshape it a little bit. So these ta'usim were bred because of that. One, ta'us aleph. The first ta'us is, hine, avodah zarah yimishnei minim. Hamina rishon, So the first toss of Azor was to make a distinction between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the actual running of the world. The logic behind it, so to speak, was, well, you don't think that a Kadosh Baruch Hu, who is so high and so transcends everything, would care about a few dots on a citrus fruit. Doesn't make any sense. So he left it over to the lower bureaucracy to take care of it. In the good old days, when Stalin ran Russia, so...
He's coming back, right?
What?
He's coming back.
Yeah, but it's a schwache version. Stalin was, he succeeded in making an incredible hero worship of Stalin. And, you know, people actually were blind. You know, we look at him as a murderer. They looked at him as a great, great, great leader. So when people got caught up, you know, every so often Stalin would decide to destroy another part of society. So many people got caught up. Their attitude was, it's the bureaucracy under Stalin that did this. If Stalin would only know what's happening in this particular area, but it's the low level bureaucracy that did it, and that's how people cope with it. You know, there was, so here there's a sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not misasik tachtonim, it's malachim and so on. This spills over to the idea of, you know, Malachim being responsible for this, and so that, the mistake of this Malachim. Like you have a Gemara that says that the Malachim Ovis came down, they took the wrong one, it's a very similar name, took the wrong one, brought him up to it. You can't understand it, Chas V'Shalom, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is minutik from it, you have to Zem Pshatnit. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mashpil himself to the din of every last one.
You know, motivation for researching Shabbat, I would have thought that the motivation was that I'm not a Chrayi and I'm not only to be responsible. I was also saying that one is sort of coping with the Ram and the...
It's a way of... Again, there are many reasons for it. There was it came with an argument about how could it be a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but down deep, it was that the day to day interactions of mine should not be told in a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. For whatever reason, I don't like that. Either Avodah Zarah wanted to worship these forces. They felt much better attacking the thing that directly affects them, rather than dealing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's unknown or whatever it is. It's like when a dog attacks you, the smart thing is to find the owner and threaten him that if he doesn't keep his dog in check. The stupider thing is to fight with the dog. In other words, the understanding the shoresh versus the teitzah is an important part of emunah.
And we're saying that there are multiple powerful motivators to deal with the dog instead of the dog.
Correct. And in all of these, we mentioned it last time. In all of these in Yanim, you need to separate out the root cause and the rationalization, and that's the answer to all. You know, you have all these Gemara, you have all these Chazal, and especially later Sfarim, for instance, that Yosef's brother. Let's give an example. There's the Mishnah Melech has a sefer called Prashas Drachim, where he gives halachic insight into various. Into various machlokas in the Gemaras, in the Chumash. So, Lamasha Yosef, the brother, he has chapters and chapters, prokim and prokim, of that the machlokas Yosef was what din they had, if they had a din of the Noach or the Yisrael, a lot of nafgaminis in that machlokas, and all the fights they had and everything like that was totally in that machlokas. That's the Prashas Drachim. A lot of extraordinary, you know, what they mutter to Achoseim, what they mutter to Menachai, did they, you know, on and on. He has a lot of things totally in that. It's marvelous. Now, the one thing we have to understand is Yosef's brothers, they're selling him down is an avera that Arayom Hazeh affects us. You know, it's al mikra mekesef tzaddik. The slichas that we say on Yom Kippur about Rebbe Akiva and Daruge Malchus, that he based it on this and so on. You don't get killed if you got the wrong side of the hakira of the Mishnah. That's not an avera if your shtickle Torah comes up this way or that way. But the answer is that we need to distinguish between the motivation and the excuse. So the Shvatim were big people, and they built up a certain understanding, but it was based on the fact that they really, really were jealous of Yosef. So they were not the type of people that could be jealous and kill him because they're jealous. But it affected their perspective, and that's why they ended up building a whole web of falsehood around him, halachic falsehood, things that good arguments, but it was all built on a fallacy that was exacerbated or initiated by their jealousy.
How are we to make sense of the tremendous space in the Torah that's dedicated to Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah is set up as like the greatest enemy,
right.
The arch nemesis of a Torah Yid. And Avodah Zarah today is essentially irrelevant. You have to hunt around to find it. How are we supposed to make use of these tremendous...
So you know what? I would say... On the face of it, the Torah is written for each generation, obviously. The Rambam writes a lot of things. But I believe that on a psychological level, they're recurring. For instance, today, people don't believe in Avodah Zarah. They don't believe in God either. But nobody really feels less than less dying. You can't walk over to anybody and say, okay, so you don't believe in God, so life is just about grab as much as you can for yourself and damn the world. So people project all sorts of religious roots in various other projections. So it's saving the environment, gay rights, equal this. In other words, things have changed. There's a famous vartel I said in Europe. It says, someone asked, it says, Yedehem He said, how do you have an Avodah Zarah that doesn't talk, feel, walk? Like, what kind of Avodah Zarah is it? So the guy said, communism. You know, here you have an Avodah Zarah, it doesn't walk, doesn't talk, doesn't feel. You know, so people became fixated on ideas of good, which were very different ideas. So communism became an Avodah Zarah in the sense that it's something that is it's a mitzvah.
So the root, the sort of common denominator between Avodah Zarah, or the root problem of Avodah Zarah, and all of those philosophies or perspectives or realities in the modern world that we need to stay away from, or that they assign chashivas to something
right.
that is not of ultimate
Avodah, in other words, people ask, what's the point of Avodah Zarah? People have a most powerful need or recognition that there must be something that is great in the world, chashiv, central, worthy of striving for. You tell somebody, don't you want to be famous, successful? You know, the core point of what you live for and what you strive for and what's the most important thing is that the kud in a person.
And I imagine people dedicate their lives no less to gay rights or to equality and so on.
Correct.
The environment
with the same and the same feelings. It's a channeling of the feelings of striving to be good, to be better, to be best. Is with those same feelings.
The worship in that sense.
Yes, you know, correct. It's a striving for something which a person perceives as an ideal.
So just as we're supposed to abstract halachos that refer to, like, you know, donkeys and cows to the modern day scenarios, cars and commercial real estate, we're all supposed to abstract.
Sure, Avodah Zarah means the focus of a person's striving, and it becomes, you know, people who do work, for instance, saving the environment. It's I'm always amazed that the people who want to save the environment because of future generations don't have children themselves. So who they're saving for, I'm not sure exactly. But the real, so that's the thing, it's Mother Earth. We have a pact with Mother Earth. We're raping the Earth. There's a certain personification of the Earth, of nature, of the spirit of the universe. And it's the same koach hanefesh, and you dull it. It's just like when a person, when kids wants to eat, so you give him a dummy in his mouth. When a person is on narcotics, you give him methadone to jam up the receptor so that he's not going to take anything else. The same thing happens over here with the person's religious feelings. The person has a need to recognize hakara in something, and if he doesn't, and if he doesn't express it that way, you find many times people will throw their energy into things. You know, you'll find a person who doesn't have much to do is also get involved in X and Y and Z, and you say there's something that's a real Avodah Zarah to him, even if it's a good cause. But it's true. It's sort of, he's lacking a place where to focus it, and it's going to the wrong place. So one of the things about Azar was not to deny God as much as giving some autonomous authority to something underneath it. Valkein hemidu lehem avodos, also le mizbechos, lehem yizbuchol niktu lehem shemashol tosu. They felt there are things that have a real toelis. My father-in-law was very, very makbid on ribbis. That was one of his big things. He really, really went out on a limb not to take ribbis. There was once, he took a big financial loss. The yeshiva was offered a big loan from the Sochnut with a very low interest rate. The rate was so low, it was less than inflation. So basically, it was a giveaway. And my father went back and forth with its mutar not. He started going to Tel Aviv to pick it up, and he made a U-turn, and he said, no, it's wrong, it's ribbis, and there's no head to fit, that's that. So people, but my shver, one of the things that he once said about ribis was, he was very taken. The Gemara says, what's wrong with someone who takes ribis? It says, V'loy oid ela sha'oyser abeinu moyshe chacham. Part of the person's angle when he takes ribis is he turns Moshe Rabbeinu into a fool. He says, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have been financially astute, he would have recognized the value of having loans with interest. And I could, you know, you think you're a bigger chacham than the Torah by getting around it. So a person says to himself, you know, you have to be practical. Hashem is up in Shemayim. You know, I'm sure that if the 120, he's the one that you face. But there's realities in the world, and you need to address those realities. Torah space, the second one. Yeshna shtei rishuyos. Amin hasheni amru chas v'chalila shtei rishuyos hei. Echad pol tov, echad pol ra. Be'omram ein hefer b'lo yefechay. Okay. He says something. This is an idea that's a lot. It's a lot more. It's logically a lot more powerful, and it's important to understand why this is so difficult. It's very hard to perceive. It is impossible for us to imagine something that is the opposite of itself. For instance, the same God who miraculously has given us life can't be the same God that in Auschwitz murdered the greatest genocide and hurt and everything like that. It's got to be there's something else in the world. I can't reconcile the same God, and the Christians have that motif. There's the devil and his minions versus the Lord and his minions. We don't that idea is very Christian. It comes from the Christian ability to make God less than one, and therefore giving the devil a metzias. When we talk about the Satan and the Yetzirah, we always talk about the psychological angle. We understand the Satan is a malach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, and his job is to make life difficult for us, and this is his job, and he does the job of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's not someone fighting against God. He's someone on behalf of God who is out to test us. That's our understanding of it, and it's very very. And whereas the Christian, again, I'm not authorized to speak. I'm here for the church, or the churches, but the general ruach that people get is this type of idea of Ra being a force against good. The Lord lead his host, and the devil and his minions lead their host. But the devil is someone that's a renegade. It's not. He's fighting. He's a terrorist fighting HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We don't believe that. We believe that what we see as Ra and Tov are coming from a common shorish. It's impossible? Yes, it's impossible. Because for us, being that we don't have the ability to inherit, it's impossible. But there's a chazal, an extraordinary chazal in the beginning of Akhir Mois. And it starts with a pasuk. It says, Mi yitein tomei mitohor lo achas. I believe it's in Chukas. That's Mi'itin Tomei Mitor Lo Achas. It's the beginning of Chukas, and then there's one in Achrei, Ki Mikre Echad Yikre Letzadik V'Lerasha. Let's first start with the one in Chukas. It goes like this: how can Tomei Tohar come from Tomei? How could somebody like Terach have a son like Avraham? And it lists a whole bunch of areas where you see something Tomei breeds something Tohar. And the pasuk says, "Loi echad." It's got to be the one. You know, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu as echad, it's impossible for Tomei to breed Tohar unless there's a common shoresh behind it all, and that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's one. In Achrei, it's a little less. Over there, it brings Mikra Echad Asad Karash. It says that Nadav and Avihu went into Kaddish. Titus went into Kaddish, and Hashem helped him. None of Aviyah go in, they die. You know, all sorts of things that happen to Tzadik Derasha, and it's the same. It doesn't, the Chazal don't sort of answer it, but I think it's the same point. At the end of the day, there can't be two things in the world. So just like, let's give a mashal. Let's take a simple mashal, we'll understand it simply. When you do interrogations, so the one of the most elementary approaches in an interrogation is to have the good cop, bad cop guy. Now,
Kira works that way.
What? Kira works that way. I remember Matthew Rosenblum. You know Matthew Rosenblum.
Yeah,
so when he made his first siyum on brachas, so I used to learn with him like lunchtime, whatever. I used to come by yeshiva because Jonathan was. He said, he has a very dry sense of humor, very dry. Very. He said, you know, something he wants to thank his brother Michael for being so understanding, and he wants to thank his brother Jonathan for making vroom. You know, his brother Michael was like the easy, nice, understanding where you're coming from, and Joseph Jonathan was, Matthew, you have to do it. There's no two ways about it. You know, but so a fool, you know, a guy who's not the, well, he says, you know, they're not all the same. Some of them are really nice people, some of them are monsters. The truth is, they are the same. It's just two tactics to get the same way. The same thing, the ideal teacher will use sometimes tougher measures, sometimes warmer measures. His point is to get you to the right thing, to learn, and so on and so forth.
This really isn't such a question. What you're saying is that it's only a question from the perspective of limitation. But once you transcend that...
We're here talking about the ultimate. I mean, how could someone good have created Auschwitz? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who's the all good and Tov, created something like Auschwitz?
You have to ask yourself, you know, what's the grand scheme when you think about
it? I understand, but you know, we could talk about it academically, sitting over coffee and a thing, but when you live through it, it doesn't, you know, it's emotionally, the answer doesn't come so easily.
So really what Rabbi's saying is that All of the raid on this topic is ways of helping us emotionally deal with one.
Depending on who can do it, I always say that, you know, Tisha B'Av, a lot of times we pick people and live through it. I'm not entitled to say anything about the Holocaust. Kloisenberger Rebbe was, he lived through it, lost his 11 children. And his wife and his chassidus, and everything was destroyed. He's entitled. I mean, if he says ve'afalpi kein, and you know that Hashem is the toiv and whatever it is, it's meaningful. Those words are meaningful for him.
So all you're really saying is that Rebbe doesn't, and none of us have the emotional kalim to understand the kasha properly.
Right.
But then, if we understood the kasha properly, all we would need would be better emotional kalim to understand the teretz.
It's an emotional teretz. Listen, in a certain sense, it is. We don't have the ability at one time. Rarely is there the perfect mechanach who can be upset at the kids b'chutz, but not b'fnim, and see it as a tactic. We're lost with one or the other. We do have two personalities in us. We have a personality who cares, and then we have the guy who's enraged and gets very upset, and that's that. And it's like when people say he's like two different people, it's real. You know, in the big picture, we really like our kid, but you know, sometimes it gets on our nerves and we lose it. But when we lose it, we lost it. You know, that piece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we never lost it, and it's all one. But they had a need to have two. And that's an elementary, kfira.
Just wanted to share something very interesting. Zalman lent me a book on the Holocaust that was, I was giving a class. There was a group of students who were coming to this, the Holocaust Museum. They asked me to give a class. That's why they asked me to give a class before they went to the museum. So this is something that Zalman used to prepare before he went to Poland. And it was fascinating. The author of this book was somebody who himself was from, and who had a lot of colleagues, friends, you know, but people that went through the war with them that were not from, after the war they gave up, and they were at some kind of an event, I guess it was like a sort of a federation or ACC or like organized Jewish event, and there was some big Jewish rabbi gets up, personality, and says, you know, after all the horror of the Holocaust, of course, how is it we can believe in God? And the non-believing, the non-from survivors were so angry at him. Like, you little twerp, like, you never went through it, you never were challenged by it, and you sit, you know, in your air-conditioned office smoking a cigar saying, there can be no God.
Right.
To them, the biggest tragedy of the Holocaust was that they lost their God.
Right, right.
Yeah, it was amazingly powerful.
One of the things that puzzles me always, we'll learn a parasha, this week's parasha, the whole Kosai. We're going to learn with our kids, and we learn it at the school, and it says, the Rebbeinu Shalom forged a covenant with us. The Kosai, the second time in Kisavo. And he says, if you're my nation and do the mitzvahs, everything will be roses. If you stray, I will bash you like nobody's ever bashed before, the worst possible things. And he it listed. So, you know, I mean, that's the deal, in other words. And I'm not the person to judge anything. But certainly, Kol Yisrael was Kol Yisrael was getting away from the Bris. And anyway, I have a book now called On the Eve. It's about Europe between the wars and what was going on. A secular book, not a frum book in any sense of the word. But it describes the process and basically the amount of assimilation that started going, and the amount of everything. I mean, it's you read it and it's brutally real. Like, if Frumkeit was religious Jewry was disappearing rapidly. It had disappeared in Western Europe. It had disappeared in Russia through no fault of their own. And in Eastern Europe, it was rapidly disintegrating and disappearing. So you can't say, well, Akash Baruch warns and says, if you stop keeping mitzvahs, I will devastate you in a way that the other nations devastated. And then we stop keeping mitzvahs and we say, it's not fair. But where were you? Well, I don't understand. I mean, that's, you know, we're not talking about the what it sits in and what it sits out. You're talking about, you know, it was mass, certainly leaving Frumkeit, and then assimilating out wherever they could. Some places the guard didn't want them, so they had no choice.
Yeah. Shutting down the mikvahs and closing the schools.
I was mentioning this. It's so many times I've had conversations with students, and sometimes they've gone one way or the other, meaning, like, they'll say, well, how could you ever explain a God that could have the Holocaust? And I say, it's in the Torah. Some of them say, it's in Parakish Bukhukosai, but for some people in the mindset, that's not going to help them. Even though they say, what possibly religion? I said, well, it's been told to us already in here. That doesn't always help the argument.
Well, it already sounds like some of the religious, so-called modern Orthodox people, they have this issue, but you do believe in the Chumash. And this is, all the Tanakh has one message. Vayasu Yisrael Rabbeinu Hashem, Vayavu Elohim this. Vayasu Rabbeinu Hashem, Vayavu Elohim zeh. Vayizak Hashem, Vayavu this Moshim. That's, if there's a chorus line in Tanakh, that's the chorus line. That's what Tanakh's all about. So you can't say, you can ask yourself why that Kosh was set up like that. But it was set up that way, and it's very hard, you know. It's something that really, when you read some of the personal accounts, and I'm not saying there wasn't a process that took many processes, but you know, Frumkeit, there was Chaim Grader wrote a book describing his growing up in Vilna. He was close to the Chasnish at some point, became Fry, and he describes that everybody, the young generation, was coming totally Fry. And, you know, it was, if Vilna had, I mean, my mother-in-law grew up in Vilna. She went to a quote-unquote Frum school. She went to the Frumster school in Vilna for girls. It was Frum because for Tanakh, the teacher would put a yarmulke on. That was Vilna. That was Chaim Moshe's Vilna. That was the Vilna that was, you know, it was gone. My mother was only allowed to play with three or four kids in the whole city. That was her father.
She was only allowed to
play with three or four kids, you know, because that was it. That was the...
Can I ask?
Yeah.
I had this discussion with students, and, like, it's says in the Torah, we keep the mitzvahs, we're good, if not, we're a problem. But throughout the Jewish history, we've always had problems. Jews have been keeping the mitzvahs, and we still get hammered.
First of all, in many cases, it's not true. Jews in Spain, the so-called golden era of Spain, was a golden era of assimilation. Many Jews had converted before the Inquisition. So read Baer, who's the expert on it, big volumes. I mean, he's the historian. Right? The numbers are staggering. It was a very pleasant, Spain was a very pleasant life. They were very acculturated, and everything followed with it. Now, I don't know if you could do tit for tat and everything. And like he said, for these, like you said before, it really depends. It's an emotional issue, and it depends the person's, what is he ready to hear, understand, or whatever it is. I would present it less as doing mitzvahs naveris, but rather as undoing the covenant with God. In other words, basically, the question wasn't they were lax in eating knedlach and gebrachos and that. That's not the issue. The issue was they said we don't see it as such. Period. It's not binding. We don't want it. We don't believe in it. It was the package. It wasn't the issue. Wasn't a particular mitzvah that they were more zohar or less zohar. You know, it was the nation told God, we are fine to be with Umas HaOlam. You know, we're Germans, we're French, we're English, we're in a different century. This is not, you know, we don't believe the whole story, and we have no such thing.
I think a big part of the question for a lot of people is, so let's say the Moshe, there's a husband who is the most amazing husband, and he says, yeah, I'm going to take care of my wife, treat her like a queen, etc.
Right.
But if she ever dares cheat on me, so I'm going to beat her within an inch of her life, I'm going to chain her to the floor, I'm going to... And that's essentially what happened. It's like, there's problems. Us. One can argue that we've got the most...
Okay, so the first thing they should be asking, they should ask themselves, on Bukhu Kaisai. They should sit down and say, why? What's the pshat in it? Why? And the answer is... HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to show you within the world that impossible to attribute it to anything natural. The most civilized nation turned into a monster. And it wasn't just, you know, I don't think Palestinians are monsters in the sense that it's a fight over a piece of land. They want the land, you want the land. They were there a little bit, you were there a little bit. So you fight. I don't see that as anything beyond the pale of normalcy. You know, two people squabbling over something. Yes, they can go over the line. No, but it is, that's not something that's out of the norm. All nations that fight over land, you know, one way or another, kill each other. It's not. I don't see that as extraordinary. But Germany was something just not. That they went to look for Jews in Salonika and in Albania and in every Farukta place and organized it and spent, you know, they were fighting, on three fronts at the same time, and he didn't even bother to put it aside for when he has time. Like, I mean, he was fighting Russia, America, and in Africa he had a theater. So he had three theaters going, and he was, until the last minute, he was busy with the Jews. It's incredible. And it's not the pshat of the... It's one thing, good old pogroms. The Jew lives down the block, he's got a lot of money. Kill him, take the money. That's normal behavior. That's within... But hello? Bulgaria, Albania, I mean, these were much further those days. It's like a two-day train trip to send down forces, commit to doing something. It was insane. And you know, so first of all, whatever people say about God, why didn't they lose their belief in humanity, in culture, in civilization? Well, I mean, Germany was arguably the most civilized country. It still is probably... It's the most menschliche place in terms of word is a word, time is a time, everybody's literate, greatest philosophers, greatest achievements, mostly everything, you know, you name it. And so it's a way of demonstrating that if there is no God, then the world is hell. Then the world exploded on you. You know, that's what came across. If you don't want me there, let me show you what it's like when I'm not there. You know, it's like a mother slash wife who doesn't feel appreciated. If she doesn't cook for 2-3 weeks and everybody's living off peanut butter, they've run out of things to put the peanut butter on. Like they started with the bread and bananas and celery and
it's not just if you don't want me, I'm not there, because I'll double and triple 7 times. Like, in other words, like it's seen more as a hasara.
In other words, it's only that I keep the world in check,
right.
And you know, it's for instance, let me give an example. I read this in the 60s. Yet Montreal was me'ozim me'olam considered a very civilized city. Montreal was always. There was a police strike there in the 60s. I don't remember what it was. The police struck for a week or something. I don't remember. And the city turned into a hell. Everybody looting and robbing. It was insane. And it was like a sobering lesson that even a city that seemed to have norms and normal and everything, but take away the Mirage of Malchus, and this is what happens. Klal Yisrael is an anomaly. That a nation survives amongst other nations is an anomaly. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said Klal Yisrael runs by different rules, and you know they don't have the right to survive. It's like the Navi says, you were born with a C-section, like you never was meant to be born. Egypt was the most powerful country. You were their slaves, and that was it. You know that there's no such thing as.
Why don't we have the right that everybody else has?
That's because we're not everybody else. Exactly, we don't have a right to be like everyone else. That's Klal Yisrael is different in that our right to exist as a nation is either or. 100%. That's exactly what Klal Yisrael is unique. Ashreichem Yisrael
is completely
impossible.
What?
Exactly. Ashreichem Yisrael b'zman shatem oylem at oylem malo zman shat yordim, you know, yordim yosim migruin shal umos. It's exact. That's exact point. That Klal Yisrael does not have the ability to survive as another little. Bulgaria. That's the real. That's where the Zionism tried. Zionism was another attempt. This feeling of being that we only survive as a nation if we're from was very irksome. Was very difficult for people. So there were different trends. There was an assimilation trend. I want to be a German. I'm a German anyway. Germans didn't take kindly to that. They said, you know, they didn't, you know, they backlashed, all of you. So Zionism was one of the approaches. You know, the reason is because you can't be American and Israel at the same time, so be an Israeli in Israel. That's a very natural thing. And if it'll be naturally there, there won't be any problems. And it's not solved.
So we shouldn't be surprised that, for example, this obscene percentage of United Nations resolutions are against Israel.
Yeah, someone
like,
took back
and said, that we should be like Albania. You know,
in the Central African Republic, there are 100,000 people massacred, and it's still 95% of the UN resolutions. Like that lady they caught on tape, that was translated in the UN, that the mic was on, and she didn't realize it, and she said, you know, 5 resolutions against Israel in one day? Isn't that a little bit exaggerated? I think they fired her subsequently. She was in the back room, the poor lady. But you know, anybody sane says, like, you know, come on. It's like, you know, I mean, you really got to be kidding.
There's got to be more important things going on the globe than 5 resolutions against Israel.
Right? Rabbi, that's what it is.
Huh?
Rabbi Kupesa talks about the similarities between the Kupesa.
Yeah.
What's that?
Exactly. That's the point. We're not normal, and it means we're either very successful, or we suffer incredibly. We don't have a mitzvah like that, and there's no. It's forcing us home to believe that until we really believe it.
That's such a profound thing. Even for you could be someone who does mitzvahs, but that's a wholly different thing.
Correct.
I mean,
correct.
You know, that's why. Just speaking, I know we're doing Kirov over here, right? I'm trying, right? That sometimes we sell it as just like you can be the same as everyone else, but you're doing mitzvahs, but which is not the right way. But it's such a profound overturning of one's worldview for even a from person to take
right.
on that for Hashem's people. It's a totally different mitzvah.
Right, it's a very, it's a. Okay.
Yeah. Does it follow that because Yosef's brothers had a Megiah, therefore
you said that
the Pesach was wrong?
I said it.
Yes. The Pesach had the Negiah, and that's why a person can't possibly if he has a Negiah. A person needs to understand himself.
Right. Like you guys, like so
they shouldn't have passed, which is what I'm saying. And Maisa now can go back and say that the answer to that question was,
right, that's true.
Like Yosef said, that they were Negiah.
Right.
That's correct. They were arguing on a certain Ben Noach. They shouldn't. Ben Noach. They shouldn't have passed that along. They were no game. You know what I'm saying? Because it's really they were wrong.
It was
the
Torah faulted them. They were using it as a. They were using it as an excuse for I'll give you a mushroom. Let's say you don't like a particular person. You're standing next to a shul. You're telling me, you know, there might be a shaila with standing next to somebody's davening Shmoneh Esrei. It might be Kedaisha Rabbi Don Abbas. He might be right technically, but that statement was a cover. You know, it had nothing to do with the. With the, with the uh,